Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT with Trish Wood.
Hi, everybody. Trish Wood here. Hope you've had a terrific week. I had a busy one. I'm working on a film about COVID-19 and all of the egregious mathematical, statistical, epidemiological errors that went into it. There's so much to criticize about the COVID response that it's hard to know where to begin. So where we're beginning is at kind of at the beginning, right? They made a lot of mistakes and compounded them. And then instead of switching gears, said, you guys can't talk about it. We're not going to listen to people who are making corrections. So it's been going on for about a year, this film, and it's been a hard, hard slog, but we're making good progress. And I feel very strongly it's going to blow the lid off of the COVID response, which nobody is apologizing for even now, right? It's insane. So I guess they're just not going to. They've destroyed all these people's lives and ruined our faith in public health and media and everything else, and they're just going to walk away. And I know Tony Fauci's doing that because obviously I've been deep diving lots of things he said and done, including his deposition for the Missouri v. Biden trial, which I got from his lawyer, Janine Yunus, who has been on the show with me. She's a lovely person and a terrific lawyer. And I came across a show he was on. I think it's called Rising, and it's for the Hill publication. And they were interviewing him. He normally only does people who are sycophants, who worship at the feet of Fauci. But he kind of stumbled into the wrong place. I wouldn't say that these two are as kind of hard-assed in their approach as they probably should have been, but they're not fools. So they asked him a couple of tough questions, and he resorted to lying. He actually says, and you can find this online, he actually says, I didn't lock anybody down. Right, so we have at the beginning of our film, Fauci ordering the lockdown. He holds up this PDF to the media during the White House press briefing, and in the PDF it says all congregate settings. Right, that's how he did it. But he did do it. He did order lockdowns and he did defend lockdowns. But he's so slippery. It's something I learned as an investigative journalist for TV, interviewing a lot of really slippery people. Is that the ones who will blatantly lie, who will bold-faced lie, they will say it is sunny when it's raining, those are the hardest ones actually to nail down because they're so hubristic about it. They're so bold, they're so brave that you almost can't catch them because you're like, well, maybe it isn't raining outside if he's blatantly, you know, I mean, it's hard. And that's who he is. And you may or may not notice that I did many, many years ago during the AIDS crisis, have the chance to interview Tony Fauci in his office at the NIH at NIAID, Allergies and Infectious Diseases. And we had a huge dust up. That was my job in those days. I was kind of a female Mike Wallace, and I got paid to do it, and I was pretty good at it, fearless, actually. I'm not sure I could do it now, but I did it then when I was younger and smarter. And you know, it was maybe about an hour and a half, really, really tough interview for him. And he was slippery. I did lay, I think, a couple gloves on him in that interview. But sadly, the tape has disappeared. It would be wonderful to bring that out now. But the producer I was working with, I don't even know what he did with it. It's gone. But anyway, that's Tony Fauci. So this clip, if you can find it, on the Hill program called Rising, you will see Tony Fauci actually saying that he didn't order lockdowns. Amazing, right? Amazing. So that's kind of where we are on COVID. The other thing I just wanted to bring to your attention, because I haven't done a ton of COVID coverage lately, a little bit here and there, but I just want to say that the myocarditis story is not going away. It is the real deal, people. The only, and I'm sure you all know this, but the only thing we need to know firmly now is how bad is it? And some of the more recent studies, kind of very hardcore, well-done, well-designed studies, are suggesting it's a really big issue, much, much bigger than we thought. And the person who I rely on to some degree for that is a Substack writer named Eugypius, E-U-G-Y-P-P-I-U-S. He's some big scientist slash official in Germany, which is why he writes under a nom de guerre. But he's written an amazing piece. And he says, I'm behind on vaccine injury research. I've come to find the topic very depressing, which it is. I'm with him. And we already know what's going on. Still, this is the Plague Chronicles. That's the name of his Substack. And I owe you at least this brief remarks on these developments. So there are three studies that he's talking about in this article, and they're very, very scary. So if you're following that, do dive into that. And then the other thing I would say is that Australia had a good day against Pfizer last week. Some Pfizer execs were being questioned by some senators, and I will say that they were taking it on the chin. I was flabbergasted at how ill-prepared the Pfizer executives were. Unbelievable. They would not answer a yes or no question. They had clearly very, very well rehearsed talking points, but these people were not, they weren't letting them get away with that. So they were facing, again, it's the kind of pushback the media did not do. And when you look at these clips, this was recorded. They're on my Twitter feed at Wood Reporting if you want to find them. I also talk about them in my other show, Trish Wood is Critical. You can hear them there too. When you watch these elected officials actually doing their jobs and asking hard questions about the vaccine, it's very, very shocking how ill-prepared these guys are. And they're ill-prepared because this was a monumental screw-up. They wouldn't even answer whether or not they knew if the vaccine prevented transmission when it was outsourced or released to the public. Can you imagine that? We've all been living in fiction land. Under mandates. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. But it was good to see that because I felt less destabilized seeing play out on video under tough questioning what I knew to be true, but was not seeing in legacy media. Pfizer would have been being beaten up by legacy media 10 or 15 years ago on this stuff with a smackdown every time they appeared. But of course, now they don't do that because they're all on Team Pfizer. So it was great to see, and you must seek it out if you can. Very, very well done. Our guest today is somebody who's been on the program before. His name is Ray McGuinness, and he is one of Canada's top journalists, probably the top investigative journalist working right now, actually, because that's not that he's not wonderful, but it's also a really small boat. Nobody's doing that kind of work anymore. So the cream definitely rises to the top. But he would be good even if there was 100 other people working, because he's taking on subjects that nobody else wants to do because they're not politically correct. So the last time he was here, we were talking about his brilliant piece on the convoy, but also through the lens of the Commission of Inquiry that was examining the appropriateness of our Prime Minister invoking the Emergencies Act or not. And it did what journalism should be doing and showed in very, very powerful relief that the act should never have been invoked against these people. The bank account should not have been frozen. And that was all very evident at the inquiry itself, at that evidence was given. So this kind of namby-pamby result, which, and that's what public inquiries always do, right? They're always namby-pamby. They never actually go after anybody because that's not their purpose. Their purpose isn't fact-finding. Although I will say in this case, a lot of facts were found, and they did get interesting law enforcement and security people under oath talking about how peaceful and non-threatening the convoy actually was. So why did they handle it that way? Why did our Prime Minister not just walk the several hundred feet from the Parliament building over to sit down with Tamara and Chris and the rest of them? I don't know. Much better to call them names and try to turn the city against them with lies and then get rid of the protest with billy clubs and black-clad police officers on horseback. That's what happened here, with the full-throated support of media, who were the main purveyors of lies about the convoy. Obviously, our prime minister was too. But they were happy to play along. And many, many, many of the lies told about the convoy, including that fake arson story, which I've talked about a lot on the show, were blown up at the inquiry hearings about this. And obviously, Ray McGinnis wrote about that. So he's back today to talk about part two of this story, and that is what happened at the Coutts blockade, which was a separate event. But we have now in this country four people involved in the Coutts blockade still sitting in prison without bail. It has very, very powerful January 6th vibes. Only there was no violence at the Coutts blockade, as far as I can tell. And I think as far as Ray reports in this latest piece that he has written. So for something called Propaganda in Focus. The last piece was for Covert Action magazine. And these are long form investigative pieces. So before we go to Ray, I just want to say one thing about our prime minister, if I may. He announced that he was getting he and his wife were getting a divorce, which is no biggie. We all knew. Everybody in the know understood that they weren't really even living together. I think she cannot stand him, like the rest of us. But here, a very interesting phenomenon has happened. I have to tell you, it really kind of fries me off. Media, legacy media and others are now in social media saying, oh, you know, he's a husband and father. Don't be mean to our poor prime minister just because he's getting a divorce. Don't make vile comments about him, blah, blah, blah. And obviously no one is going to pick on his children and nobody's going to pick on his wife. It's he that people want to pick on. And I think, and rightly so. And I think for the media, legacy media, to run interference for the prime minister, we don't know why he's getting a divorce. Maybe he's getting a divorce for something that might amount to moral perfidy. Maybe he was mucking about with other women or men. Who knows? You know, we have a right to know these things about the people we elect, to see if they fit into our own personal moral framework. And I don't think we should not talk about that in order to protect his wife and children. To quote my mother, he should have thought of that before. If he's going to behave like a jerk and that's the reason, then he's got to face the consequences of that. So this is just another psyop on behalf of legacy media. It really bugs me. I do feel sorry for his kids, obviously. Divorce is a terrible thing, but we're not shutting down democracy because the prime minister is getting divorced. I want to know what happened so I can make an assessment as a citizen about who this guy is. I kind of know who he is, but I think we're entitled to that information. So yet again, you know, we can't talk about these things because it might hurt people's feelings. We're not allowed to do that. I have an update on the Richard Bilkstoe story that I talked about last week. This is the Toronto high school principal who sadly killed himself after some anti-racist training sessions. There's more on that. It's getting a lot of worldwide attention. I wrote about it in my Substack, Trish Wood is Critical. I went with the transcripts I obtained through the filings the lawyer did in his lawsuit against the Toronto School Board. And now Barry Weiss has on her website some writing done also by another Canadian reporter, Rupa Subramania, who has been on this show, who I admire very much. So you should be looking at that because these anti-racist DIE sessions are very, very hard on people. You humiliate people publicly, accuse them of being racist, ruin their career, something bad might happen. And we need to have a long, hard conversation about that. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the next hour, and also some reporting from Brownstone about how the money trails of the pandemic planning racket circle back to Sam Bankman-Fried, who's connected to all the pandemic planning places, throwing money at the Democrats. And gee whiz, folks, some of the charges against him have been dropped. So we'll circle back and look at that story at the top of the hour, just before we come back with Ray. But right now I want to talk to Ray about his latest reporting. Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm great, Trish. Good to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you, too. What a great piece this is. Wow, you keep knocking it out of the park. Almost restoring my faith in journalism in this country. I wish there was 10 more like you.
Well, thank you. And of course, I'm the accidental journalist because I have although I'm an author of a couple of books, I have no, I never went to journalism school and all that. I just, as a citizen, finally picked up the pen, especially regarding the convoy and the commission, because few people were doing anything about it. So,
well, it's so interesting. Your piece has got people chatting again. I actually got an email from a woman who's been reporting on this on Facebook too, and doing some really good work on that. And I just actually got it 5 minutes before we went to air. And so there are other people out there doing some reporting on this, but it's yeah, citizen people doing it on Facebook. So nobody really pays them much mind. So, and they should, but it's great that you got your piece in, and it's extraordinary that we are living in a time now when people can be held without bail on such charges. So let's maybe start at the beginning, because I know that many of our listeners have a pretty good grounding in the trucker convoy, but maybe not so much in what happened at Coutts. So if you could just explain how Coutts fits into this story, and maybe give me a quick summary, and then we'll go to break and we'll get into some of the more granular details.
So there was, of course, the big protests in Ottawa. And then there were all of these other ancillary protests that sprung up in support of what was happening in Ottawa at the Windsor Ambassador Bridge, Windsor, Detroit. There was one in Emerson, Manitoba, one near where I live, the Peace Arch, or near the Peace Arch border in British Columbia, I think, and trucker crossing there. And then there was one also in couple maybe up in Sarnia. There was also one, of course, in Coutts, across from Sweetgrass, Montana. So this is the Alberta-Montana border. And I've listened to there was a Edmonton police officer, Rick Abbott, who went down there in person and spoke to the protesters. He said, "I really applaud you for the peaceful protest that you are engaging in here, and I encourage you to continue protesting peacefully." And when he went back, wow, this was put on video with someone's cell phone, and it got back to the Edmonton Police Force, and he was let go.
So, wow, that's a shocking story. So what I want people to fully understand, let's go to break. What I want people to fully understand is that this protest has been reframed by a whole bunch of people, and it is very similar to January 6th in quite a few ways, just even the way it's spoken about. But the legacy media has stopped covering it, right? Like, it's just one day you sort of wake up and you go, what happened to those people who were arrested at the Coutts protest to do with the convoy? What happened to them? People just stopped talking about it. They're sitting in prison without bail, which is really unusual in this country. So just fully take that on. This is a big story here, and it's a story very, very few people are talking about, and certainly the legacy media aren't. So we will be back with Ray McGinnis in a moment to deep dive this. Back in a moment.
TNT Radio's Steve Hook.
You've got Hunter Biden in court right now. Apparently, he's going to plead guilty to these two misdemeanor, and they are not misdemeanors. But, you know, when you're a Biden, he's going to plead guilty to two misdemeanor tax charges, which should be felonies, given the fact that he just really blew through a whole lot of guardrails there in the way of legalities. But when, like I said, when your name is Biden, you get special treatment. And Hunter is no doubt getting special treatment. The question is, is the judge today going to accept that plea, or in light of the information that's come out over the last 24, 36, 48 hours, will she instead say, you know what, this smacks of favoritism and we're not going to accept this and kick it back? I kind of doubt it, but we'll see. We'll see.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Radio works because of its ability to personalize to the listener.
What's exciting these days is that people are rediscovering it. You know, people are really rediscovering just how powerful radio is, how ubiquitous it is. It's in our cars, it's in our homes. There are so many new ways to access it. It's everywhere.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
So I'm back with Ray McGinnis, and where we're going to go with this, I think, initially, is just the idea of how these events can be apparently massaged for political reasons, because now these four people from the Quds blockade aren't they being accused of being terrorists or something and connected to this weird Diagonalon thing, whatever that is, and the media picked that up and now they're running with it. I mean, it's such a playbook now, isn't it?
It is. It's a playbook where the police accuse. Well, first they accused them of mischief over $5,000. So they were arrested, and then they're surprised later on in the day, just around the time that just before the Prime Minister invoked the Emergencies Act, to suddenly be charged with conspiracy to commit murder. And I want to add that with regard to those serious charges, which if people were guilty of that, I would say, yes, they should go, you know, to serve time in jail for a long time. But those charges of conspiracy to commit murder involve nothing specific. There is nothing in the information that's come out all this time later, nothing that the defense knows of, no RCMP officer specifically named as a potential victim, no specific time mentioned when this when there was something going to happen, no event named. You know, all the arrests were took part when people were arrested, they were unarmed. So it's really a strange story in terms of trumping up something. And I want to add too that on its face, we're being told by the government or the Crown that four men, two who knew each other beforehand, but the other two didn't know the others at all or each other. So you got two people who know each other and two others that don't know each other, and they all of a sudden decide, you know, met up over maybe a beer at the Smuggler's Inn or walking down a street in Coots somewhere and said, hey, let's go get some guns and start a shootout with the RCMP and kill some officers. And let's do that in a context where it's clear that there are 50 vehicles at least with about 100 RCMP officers. So we'll only have a 4-100, you know, standoff. Like, I mean, it's really, I mean, you would, you know, never mind, we're going to do this to start overthrowing the government. And there's also, there were reports by the RCMP that there are other unnamed people who are outside of Alberta who are also involved in this. Now, here we are talking on the 5th of August of 2023, and not a single person across the country has been questioned or investigated in relationship to any of this. So who are the unnamed other people? It seems that the officials are not concerned about that mention at the beginning of this, because they've got these four guys. And I want to mention, they're not even in a jail. They're in a remand center. I mean, there's no chaplain. There's no nurse in a jail. There's no nurse in a remand center. It's very restrictive. Yeah.
Well, and it's true also, if I read your article correctly, that you know, they are alleging this conspiracy, but they have not, as I understand it, even tested any of the weapons they found to see if there is matching DNA or fingerprints of other co-conspirators, which, if they're alleging a conspiracy, seems bizarre that they wouldn't be looking for conspirators.
Oh, the whole thing. I mean, you know, we've seen the RCMP photo op with the the RCMP vehicle behind the cache of weapons, on a table, leaning against the table. I mean, first of all, you would never. I've talked to police detectives. You would never have guns positioned on a table like that, where someone can just sort of bump the table and suddenly all the guns fall to the floor.
Right.
None of these weapons, which includes bear spray, by the way, were bagged. None of them were fingerprinted. No DNA. And they have all of these things out right away, lickety split, within hours of the arrest. Contrast that with Nova Scotia, with the shooter in Nova Scotia a few years back. It took months and months before the RCMP there revealed anything that they knew about the weapons involved. And that's because they wanted to do a forensic investigation to make sure they secure the weapons in a way so that the weapons can be used as evidence in a trial. Well, that cache of weapons that we all saw on TV or in a magazine or a newspaper, none of that can be used as evidence because of the sloppy way that it was handled. So, and also I want to add that none of those weapons that we see in that photo are connected to any of the four who've been arrested and charged with this serious crime.
You're kidding.
We still don't know. We don't know who that, and almost all of those guns are hunting rifles that are legal to own. There's a question about one or two, but it's.
And that image has really tainted that image is like the Nazi flag in Ottawa that was clearly not connected to the convoy either. But that Nazi flag set the narrative, and these guns have set. I mean, when I saw that picture, I thought, "Ooh, wow! There's bad actors in coots. That's too bad." You know, it was so peaceful in Ottawa. Now they've got. I mean, it affected me, right? But then, I'm starting to learn. You know, you've got to step back because none of this stuff is trustworthy anymore. But that photograph, I think it really hurt them certainly in the minds of the lazy legacy media who never do any work on anything anymore.
It's there for average citizens and even any of us that are digging into things more seriously. It's there for us as a photo for us to read into it and make meaning of it what we will. Right. And a lot of us don't own handguns or hunting rifles and so on. We don't know even what the names of those rifles are. You know, looking at them as a lay person who doesn't own a gun. So we can read into it. We can start to feel anxious, vulnerable, whatever, and catastrophizing. It's all there for us to be manipulated.
Well, and then they start layering on all this other stuff, these other kind of allegations about terrorist organizations and how they were radicalized, et cetera, et cetera. But before we get into that, I just want to name who these people are, because I think that's the correct thing to do. So one of them is Terry Olienek, inmate number 2200620. And he is in the Medicine Hat Remand Center. Jerry, I don't know if it's Moran or Morin, inmate number 2182289, and he's in the Calgary Correctional Center. How do you say it, Ray?
Yeah, I think Morin, yeah.
Morin, okay. Chris Carbert, inmate number 1322255 in Lethbridge Correctional Center. And Chris, is it Lysak or Lysak? Do you know?
Lysak.
1477491, care of Lethbridge Correctional Center. So those are the four men in the Free Nation of Canada being held without bail and without a good argument about bail. Is that the Crown? Who's making that decision? Is that the Crown saying no bail? And if they are saying that, on what basis is the Crown saying that?
Well, there's the Crown and the judge. I mean, they want. It's argued that these are. It's like these are dangerous people. I mean, we've got this. I think there's an instruction from the judge regarding the treatment of the men in the remand center which is like to kind of like give them limited, like they're not getting the full service that they're supposed to be given, even in a remand center. It's kind of like squeeze them a bit, like, you know, make sure things, you know, they've been told by guards things like, you know, like one guy will have the ankle bracelets going into the Lethbridge courthouse for pretrial motions, and it's on really, really tight, too tight. And he's saying, you know, I'd like this to be a little looser, you know, and, you know, because I'm not comfortable. And the guard says to him, we're not supposed to make you comfortable. So,
Were you able to talk to them? Did you talk to them? Right.
I have not yet. I'm going to be writing letters to each of the four of them.
Yeah, I think you've got to stay on this. So I just want to understand what you know about these four guys. So according to something you said like a minute ago, they didn't all know each other beforehand. So they weren't, as far as you know, co-conspirators before these arrests. Is that correct?
That's correct. You've got Chris Carbert and Chris Lysak who know each other. And then they met Jerry Morin and Tony Olienkic in Coots, and so and between the four of them, I think that they have seven children. Only one of them has, I think Chris Carbert had, an offense regarding what was reported in the news as an assault charge, but it was not even that. And that was back, you know, around the age of 19 or so. So you've got four citizens who've got businesses. One of them had nine employees. I think Jerry Morin was off in Calgary. You know, like the response of what's going on when the arrests happened, when the first Chris Lysak is first arrested, and then. Chris Carbert, you know, they all hear about it. Chris Carbert, you know, goes to bed. You know, Jerry Morin goes off to work the next day. I mean, their behaviors are completely not the way that if people were getting ready to overthrow the government, their choices and their behaviors don't reflect. They reflect the choices of ordinary citizens who are just going on about their lives.
Yeah. And so let's, so people understand it, talk about how this came about. So the trucker convoy in Ottawa was close to wrapping up, and the Coots blockade happened just before the Prime Minister lowered the boom on the people in Ottawa, and it would seem that they used the Coots blockade, which they were portraying in a very inflammatory way, as a justification for lowering the boom. Is that correct?
I mean, the Coots blockade had been running since late January. It was and there had been some, I would say, successful negotiations between the protesters and the RCMP. I think for 5 or 6 days, and earlier in February, the border was actually open for a while. So you know, there's cooperation, but then on the 9th of February, there was a request by RCMP for, like, you know, imminent danger, some sort of a big event's going to happen. They go to the judge and they say, you know, something big's going to happen, we got to jump on it. But then, you know, they're just kind of like, they're looking around, they're wondering if there's maybe some people connected to the Netherlands Reform Church in Fort McLeod that might be seeding this whole thing. And I don't want to say that in relationship to Coots in Ottawa, I forget the name of the group that was advising, as a contractor advising the Ottawa Police Service. And at one point, this advisory group for the Ottawa Police Service was telling Chief Peter Slowly and others, you know, all these people who've come to Ottawa, they're not really here to protest the pandemic measures of the vaccines. They're here to use this as a ruse to get people to join their evangelical religious group. So now over in Coots, you've got also this other story about how, you know, the people who are really behind this is like this little Dutch reform congregation in Fort McLeod. So it's really interesting the way people think about what could be causing people to be protesting. And so they're looking around, they go to several different trailers, the RCMP over the next number of days, find nothing.
What were they looking for? Sorry, Ray, what were they looking for?
They're looking for weapons and ammunition.
And let me ask you this, why were they looking for weapons and ammunition? What motivated those searches? Do you know?
There were a couple of undercover officers who were, by reports, very attractive, younger female RCMP officers who could saddle up beside some of these guys who've been accused of these charges and start talking. They didn't have any devices to record what the conversations were, but they had conversations, presented themselves, I gather, as right-wing people. They're undercover, of course. No one knows they're RCMP officers, and real big gun enthusiasts, kind of like NRA kind of esque gun enthusiasts. And so maybe somebody said, to one of these guys, I bet there's a lot of guns around here. And one of them might have said, yeah, I bet there's hundreds of guns around here. And then they take that statement and then fit it and frame it into a certain way that makes it sound dangerous.
Yeah, that's what they do. We got a break coming up. So let's take the break. And then I want to come back and find out from you what you've found out about how these four men are doing. What is their, do we know what their mental state is at this point? So let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment with Ray McGinnis on the Coots 4.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
On the off chance that additional evidence that DOJ and FBI are corrupt top to bottom and have been weaponized against the American people, one need look no further than the FBI's recent investigation into the purchase by a federal contractor of a hacking tool created by NSO, the Israeli hacking firm, to be used to spy on American citizens. And what did our crack team of gumshoe G-men find? Well, it was FBI that ordered the contractor to purchase the software to spy on American citizens. You can't make this stuff up. And regardless whether you want to disbelieve whistleblowers, think Julian Assange and Edward Snowden are villains and not heroes, one cannot deny that all of the information that they have put out, whistleblowers, Assange, Snowden, has consistently painted a picture of a federal government out of control and weaponized against the citizenry. It's high time we break our intelligence community into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
The Fallen 15 was created to honor and celebrate those who gave their lives in the global war on terrorism and to inspire others to come together and support our military families left behind. Through various programs and camaraderie events, the Fallen 15 fosters a positive environment where veterans, friends, and families of the fallen can heal and join together to rebuild bonds. Go to thefallen15.org to read about this year's honorees and to support their effort to support its mission. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. Back with Ray McGinnis on the Coots 4. It's a really big story, and not just for Canada, but it also represents what we are seeing in Western governments and countries around the world, and that is that when people who are not left of center protest, it doesn't go well. Something bad always happens. Stories are invented. Charges are laid. People sit in jail. We've got Tamara Leach and Chris Barber and the rest of the truckers are going to trial in September. And many of us thought that we were going to see them dropping the charges, but it doesn't necessarily look that way right now. They're gearing up for a long trial. Holy smokes. Nobody was harmed. The police actually said that crime went down during the convoy in Ottawa, and they're facing charges. And this is a lawfare that I bang on about on this show, because look what they're doing to Trump. And I mean, it's just insane now what's happening to people who don't go along with the narrative, right? You know, in Tamara's case, it's a mischief charge, which actually can be serious. You can do time for a mischief. It's not the kind of way we use the word in regular parlance. But boy, there was no guns. There was no, you know, no violence. The honest police who talked about it said it was, you know, peaceful as can be, literally bouncy castles with castles and barbecues. And they're going to trial. And what trial does is it eats up your resources. It scares your family. It ruins your mental health. She's cool. You know, I'm in touch with Tamara a lot, but so she's fine. But this is what they do. And so we need to always shine a big old spotlight on people who are being held, especially in cases like this, without bail, wrapped in narratives that don't make sense, right? It's what they did to Julian Assange. The narratives don't make sense. And sadly, we cannot rely on legacy media to sort this stuff out. Back in my day, I used to get innocent people out of jail. The CBC paid for it. We did big investigations into it. It was a lovely way to make a living. But they don't do that anymore, especially if the person is involved in a cause that doesn't meet the current thing narrative. So that's my little rant. Back with Ray McGinnis. Tell me about these men, Ray. What do you know about them? How are they doing?
Well, it's challenging. It's challenging to be. I mean, you know, if they were in jail, they would be with people who were there for a long time, serving hard time, and they'd get to know them. Perhaps they'd be able to have access to some nurse or a chaplain. Maybe go to a gym. None of them in their current remand center setting are allowed to go outdoors. So they're like, 539 days without sunlight or fresh air. Yeah. And these little cells are pretty teeny tiny, and there's not much besides, you know, a pen and paper and a Bible. And not very clean, I understand. I think Chris Carbert is okay in terms of his own immediate health issues, but I think Chris Lysak has had knee issues preceding his arrest, which are not great because of course there's not, you can't exercise, so you can put on weight in this little teeny tiny cell. He's got varicose veins. I think that it's Tony Morin who or which one is, I get their names, Jerry Moore. And I think he's the one that has an eye ulcer, but it could be Tony. But wow, one of them has an eye ulcer, which if not dealt with, could mean that he'd go blind. So, and it seems that Alberta Health or people in the remand center tend to be slow walking their responses to requests for probiotics and other things, or attention to emerging medical issues. One of them, I forget which one, was dealing with chronic constipation, you know, 10 days without going once, and so on. And so there's all kinds of digestive issues. I mean, even if they end up going 30 months without a trial, and then maybe is it the Jordan Act that would trigger question about whether there should be a trial at all because they've been in jail too long or been in custody for too long. But it's like the process is the punishment. We're going to put you through this. You can't even be in jail. You're in a remand center. It's very tough psychologically and mentally. And then they've been asked for plea deals. If you just confess and say you're guilty, maybe we can give you a lighter sentence. But they're maintaining after nearly 540 days that they are innocent. So I think that Canadians need to wake up about this. And certainly we have all kinds of people who immediately upon being charged for first degree murder, there was someone who murdered a Toronto police officer recently. They're out on bail. So it seems that the people, I mean, these four, they didn't harm anyone. They didn't even bump anybody, you know, on the shoulder. But other people who clearly seem to have, you know, murdered somebody, first or second degree murder, and yet are not convicted. Those who are up on those very serious charges are out on bail lickety split. So something seriously wrong with it seems to smack of a political interference in the system.
And so the other thing that happened around this event was that there seemed to be almost from the get-go a crafting of a narrative here. And I want to ask you about, because I know that the government in Ottawa, that Trudeau and Chrystia Freeland and those people were wanting to invoke the Emergencies Act. So, what, you know, are we to believe that this was just kind of a happy coincidence for them? Or do you feel, based on what you've learned, I don't want you to overstate what you know, but do you feel that the narrative crafting has come to some degree from the police work in this case, because it seems to have given the government the impetus they needed to pass the Emergencies Act?
Well, I understand from, there was a RCMP chief, Kevin Konecki, who spoke during the pretrial motions in Lethbridge Courthouse last week. I think he's talks about how there were, in addition to the local RCMP, there were also the federal RCMP from Ottawa who were also on the ground. So some indication of some people taking orders from headquarters in Ottawa, and also the Department of Justice involved federally. It seems that, and also at the same time, Konecki says that the local RCMP didn't know that the federal RCMP were on the ground at the same time, kind of like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, which is really hard to believe. And I want to say also, in terms of, just like we saw how with the pandemic, we've had decades since the 1950s have been protocols to follow whenever there's a pandemic. And then suddenly when this pandemic came along, all of those protocols went out the window, and brand new set of let's do the lockdowns, which was never recommended, and so on. So in Coutts, they're having a serious operation, which seems to emerge that maybe there's some people who are going to try and murder some RCMP officers. They're not operating off of the decades-old incident response command protocols. They're working with a brand new system that nobody's familiar with, and no one has any idea, you know, what to do with. So that's also very odd to me. I mean, it seems to me that it is helpful if there are some people who want to move something along in a more to achieve a political agenda. Sure that the local RCMP aren't quite familiar with, it's like me telling you today, you have to learn a brand new computer system before you speak to me as a guest today, you know. You know, so in the same way,
that wouldn't work out well. That wouldn't work out well for me at all.
So you've got these RCMP officers in Coutts who are working with a brand new system to do kind of like, how are we going to be communicating with each other? And, you know, so I think that there's definitely all kinds of signs that they're a compelling case to say that there was eagerness on the part of people in Ottawa and the RCMP in Ottawa for something big to happen, because it just all of a sudden lined up that And during the public order emergency commission, you've got chock-a-block of senior government officials and cabinet ministers and the prime minister all at one point or another during their testimony saying, kind of almost by default, well, even if there was things sorting out with the protesters in Ottawa and they're going to move 75% of the vehicles out by the 16th of February, well, look at what was happening in Coutts with these weapons. So it was like they go back to that over and over again as an excuse for.
Well, you cannot protest it unless you're a lefty in America or here. You can't do it. You know, you must be a terrorist if that's what's happening. I mean, they're still, you know, the Democrats, Hakeem Jeffries is still saying that 5 cops were killed on January 6th. Yeah. Like no cops were killed. Officer Sicknick died the following day of a stroke, had nothing to do with what happened. I mean, they just make this stuff up. And sadly, as you know, the media goes along with it. So it's this is a very dangerous message to send, because the truckers were about, to a large degree, helping people to feel hopeful again at a time when they'd been absolutely crushed by over-the-top COVIDian public health policy. Terrible, terrible, dehumanizing policy. And I think it was very dangerous for our prime minister and for the public health officials in the provinces across the country to see how attached to the convoy people became. And they were raising a lot of money very quickly. This was bad for them. It was bad for the COVIDian response. So they had to stop it. And, you know, I think the longer that the convoy went on in Ottawa, the more threatened that they felt. But it also seemed like, you know, Tamara and Chris and the rest of them were not going to play into their hands. And I'm not even sure that that's what happened at Coutts. I'm still waiting to find out the truth. But holding 4 people without bail on attempted murder charges is more than 500 days now, I think, too.
And we do know. Days, yeah.
540 days. And we do know also that the RCMP, I'm not just dumping, they do good things too, but the RCMP have cooperated with this government before, haven't they? Didn't Brenda, was her last name pronounced Lucky? Didn't she kind of give the prime minister a hand informationally on something regarding his gun legislation he was trying to push through or something? What happened there?
Yeah, there was a bit of pressing, you know, the thumb on the scales regarding information about the Nova Scotia investigation of the multiple shooter back in a couple years ago. And there were numbers of different RCMP in Nova Scotia who were complaining about the direction from Leckie and others in Ottawa, saying that this is unhelpful and this is interfering and this could sabotage the investigation, all in order to get a win for the government regarding their gun legislation.
Yeah. I also think the other dangerous thing that happened here is that there was, from our prime minister, a tainting of everybody who was protesting this as some kind of a, you know, fringe or misogynistic or whatever stupid things he was saying. And so that once you've done that, it makes people way more likely to see stuff in a sense that's not there, right? So anybody who disagrees with our prime minister is a far-right extremist now. That's the narrative here, pretty much. So, of course, like I read in your story, I just want to say this before we go to the top of the hour break, but I read in your story that a father of one of these guys said he was radicalized online, which makes it sound like he became, you know, a terrorist or something. And what he was actually talking about was that he held dissenting views on COVID-19 policy, right? So all of a sudden, you're a terrible person if you don't want to get the shot or you think lockdowns were a bad idea. I mean, this is the country we live in now. It's crazy.
And I think that in the case of, I think it's, this is regarding Chris Lysak's father, Mike Lysak, and And I mean, I wasn't there for the, I think, Toronto Star interview, but apparently after the press, after the news reports came out, Mike Lysak's like, I don't want to talk to the press ever again because they twisted my words. So whatever, whatever Mike Lysak said or intended to say, and the sense of what he said as it was reported were, in his view, so actually traumatizing, and he doesn't want to talk to the press again ever.
Oh, well, that makes sense too, doesn't it? Because they do twist things. And who did he talk to? Was it the Toronto Star?
I think so. Yeah,
Toronto Star. They're the worst. They are the absolute worst. Honestly, I don't know what they think they're doing. But yeah, well, that makes sense. So we're going to go to break, and we'll be back for hour two with Ray McGinnis on the Coots for Other Things Convoy and some general discussion about the failing and failed legacy media in this country and elsewhere. I'm Trish Wood. This is TNT Radio on the Fringe with Ray McGinnis. We'll be back after the news.